The following program is being broadcast on the Amazing Women of Power, the world's leading positive programming network, powered by Raven International. This show contains motivational language and may not be suitable for negative listeners.
Schemes. I'll choose my friends because apparently they're choosing me. The time is now to pay attention to my destiny.
From his humble studio in Orange County, California, comes a young songwriter with a dream, encouraging others to go after their dreams. Learning from the best in the business and passing it along to you, it's Strongwriter on the radio.
I had the blues, but I made it better, baby. That's why I wrote this song. And now you can sing along.
Yeah. My mind's made up to get right down to business and get to this second installment of my conversation with Frank Shiner. You can visit him on his website, www.frankshiner.com. And you are listening right now to Strongwriter on the Radio with me, your host, Dean Olson. So without further ado, here is my conversation, part two, with Frank Shiner from New York City. Take it away. Okay, we're back for part two of our conversation with Frank Shiner. Frank, where you been all this time? You spent all this time waiting for me to put you back on the air, and we didn't even talk about the meat of this interview, which was, of course, what's been going on with your music and some other performances, some very special performances in New York and also in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. Have I given away enough of what we're going to talk about today?
Yeah, that's about a good plan of attack, I think.
Okay, let's start up here. After you had debuted your first album, which was called "Feels Like Home," I'm sorry, the real me, and your first top five single was "Feels Like Home." When you first scored in the top five, how'd that strike you? That must be pretty cool.
Come out with a solo. A debut album produced by Gary Katz, who did 8 Steely Dan albums, and Joe Cochran, Laura Nyro, and Diana Ross, on and on. To walk into the studio at that man and produce this album and do this album, and then to have the first single release reach number 5 on the Adult Contemporary chart, nobody believed it would happen. Nobody, including me.
Wow.
So it took us totally by surprise. Then we released the second single,
The Real Me,
who's on the chart right now, and it reached number 5. Again, two. So we had two number 5s on the same album, and it's a debut album.
Wow.
Unheard of, and especially for somebody my age, we kind of broke records here. And so it's a blessing. It's certainly not expected. I never feel like anything like this is deserved. But we are absolutely striking a chord, no pun intended,
mm-hmm.
but we're striking a chord with the public, and I don't know if it's the whole story or if it's the story mixed with the music, but they are reacting to it, and it's just the most fun I've ever had in my life.
Beautiful. We want to make sure we work in Gary Katz again to the conversation. We talked about him before, and thanks to you, I was able to have him on my show, and I thought that was actually a big dream for me. And also, I don't know if it was one of my best or worst interviews because I was pretty nervous and wasn't sure. He's a man of a few words.
You gotta pull it out of him. Gary is a quiet genius.
Yeah.
I just made that up. So I
he's a quiet genius.
I think it works though.
that's a very polite way because I never. I hope one day I may get to meet him or talk to him again because I had so much more to ask him, but it was...
I know. It went very well. I heard the interview. And Gary and I meet regularly for lunch. We're going out next week again, so we just sit and chat. And
tell him that his stalker groupie is in L.A. and he loves him, and he loves the work that he's done, and hopes that we could... hope I can shake his hand again.
I will certainly tell him.
Get his bodyguard. Anyway, tell me what it was like the day you met Gary, because I know you were introduced by like a mutual, like an A&R guy?
Ken Levy, okay. Set up a meeting with Gary Katz and Mitchell Cohen. Now, Mitchell Cohen was head of A&R, Artists and Repertoire, for Columbia, Verve, and Arista Records.
So, big labels, yeah.
He's a walking encyclopedia of music.
Wow.
So the three of us sat together, and I was, you know, we talked about nerves in our first interview, and I don't really experience nerves, but I was a little nervous that day. And, you know, but I just, you know, something clicked in my head. I said, look, I'm just going to tell them what I like to do. And it was just very comfortable. It was like meeting with, you know, a family friend or uncle or whatever.
Fantastic.
And we sat there and we chatted. And in that first conversation, the concept of finding hidden gems from famous songwriters came out during the conversation. And it may be the first album ever done like this. So what we did is Mitchell Cohen found 50 or 60 songs that really nobody had heard before, or that he was sitting on, that maybe, you know, one song that Doc Pomus gave to him before Doc passed away.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, now we're hearing that maybe Doc Pomus's record company and publicist and his daughter are coming to one of our shows. I mean, they were coming to the last one and it didn't work out. So, you know, we're getting some traction, and some of these songs were either not recorded or got lost in the soundtrack of a movie, or, you know, were overshadowed by something else, and we, you know, changed the rhythms a little bit, took a little different approach on them, and gave them a new life. And it was a very interesting concept of an album, and it's been extremely successful. We're very fortunate that it just hit right.
Wow. Were you already hip to who Gary Katz was, what his reputation was and all that, or did they have to tell you this? Who he was?
Well, you know, Google is your friend. So, and I knew Steely Dan very, very well, but I wasn't up on who produced albums. I mean, yeah. I just wasn't looking at that. So when I went and looked, I said, oh my God, I'm meeting this man.
Yeah.
So Google is usually your friend, but at least I went in prepared.
Yeah, when I talked to Gary, one of the things I was happy to hear that it was my impression was that he was a perfectionist, because a lot of his albums come out very meticulous and they sound like it's flawless. And Roger Nichols was the engineer he worked with. So, like you said, 8 Steely Dan albums, they put out tons of great material, you know. I mean, you had a great artist recording them and playing on there, but, you know, sometimes if you have the right producer, they bring it all together.
Yeah, and all that was pre-autotune.
Yes.
So, so Gary is still a purist in that sense, where you'll go into the studio and you'll sing something. Say, okay, that was okay, but you're not as big as you could have been. You were kind of a little guy in there. You weren't the big guy that I know you can be. And
yeah.
And he'll say something real encouraging to you. He said, "I know you can do better than that. Why don't you go in and take another stab at it?" And you go back in and you re-sing it, and you re-sing it until it met his ear and his expectations. That was good because it goes along with my philosophy. I really despise the whole auto-tune movement in music. I mean, heck, on my Frank Shiner Music on Facebook, my page, I under the About section, I have my commitment to you. And I wrote out that I will never record anything that I can't sing live. I just won't do it.
Beautiful. Good.
And among other promises. But, you know, I made a commitment to the audience, and and I stick to that.
So now when you step out of the stage of the, you know, the house of Gary Katz, now you're forming a band of your own. Some of these musicians were playing on the record, right?
Yeah, our guitar player, like we have a couple deep in each on each instrument, but one of the guitar players played on the album, and the saxophone player played on the album.
Yeah. Are you in essence the band leader at that point? You're telling them, "Hey, I think we should let's all play together, and I'll tell you if it sounds like the right thing for the show."
Yeah, I mean, I'll have one of them designated as musical director to kind of get the band together and get the harmonies and so on together.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, I mean, look, it's a collaborative effort.
Yes.
But, you know, they're so generous that, you know, if I turn and say, I need a little more tempo on this, they absolutely, you know, you have kind of the final say. But I try never to really do that unless it's something I really have to say I need it this way. And I kind of stand back, and maybe it's my business experience, I kind of stand back and say, what do you guys think? And then I'll choose the best option.
And you've had a few, we'll skip to some of these shows that you've been doing in New York. You went to What was the first, what was that
54
place?
54 Below.
54 Below. Tell me about that place. I mean, is it legendary or what?
They took the former, the building of the former Studio 54. Mm-hmm. And the studio, which was Soundworks Studio downstairs, they took that space over and they opened up 54 Below, which is, it's kind of like an old-fashioned New York speakeasy cabaret. They even have the kind of a fake guard at the front door.
Oh, no
to let you in, you know, with the big black door.
A real guy or a statue or what? Is it a real guy doing?
No, he's real, but he's dressed in, you know, a certain garb to make it look like the old-fashioned doorman.
You get the cool experience then.
It's so cool. And the place is, and, you know, my first show there, that's the first time we ever performed the show, The Real Me, the live show, which is the album live and stories and, you know, kind of a life's journey type thing. And all the songs have meaning in the show. So it's not a concert, it's really a show.
Yeah.
And so there it is, we're putting it up on its feet for the first time. And the person that performed before me, the week before me, was Patti LuPone. And person that was performing the week after me was Jane Lynch.
Oh,
I said, are you kidding me? So
they got some heavyweights, people that know how to perform on stage.
Talk about intimidation.
Yeah, Patti LuPone's a legend in New York.
Oh,
jeez.
My God. And so good. And so there I was on this stage, and we put it up, and it was extremely successful, sold out. By noon the next day, Now, these clubs that don't actually shut down and clean up until 2 o'clock in the morning, for them to make a call before noon the next day is rare. Mm-hmm. They called and invited us back.
Beautiful.
So we knew it went well, and that was a Wednesday, and we sold it out. The next night, what they gave us was a Saturday.
Wow!
So it's quite an honor to get the Saturday. So then we did two shows there, and then through the grapevine, the Cutting Room heard about it. So then the next time we did this show a couple of months ago was at the Cutting Room. Now the Cutting Room, just to give you an idea, Sting performed there, Sheryl Crow, mm-hmm. John Mayer, Lady Gaga. I mean, the Cutting Room is just it's a really cool rock club.
Okay, great.
And so we did the show at the Cutting Room, and again, packed house. And we got invited back for July 25th now. So we have another Saturday. The last one was a Saturday as well. Saturday, July 25th at 7:30, we're doing the Cutting Room.
Wow.
So it's such a fun show.
Yeah, and they're two kind of two different personalities in both these venues, huh? That you can.
They really are, but it's funny because the show worked at both places. Now, we did add a couple of bluesy songs to the Cutting Room show that weren't in the first show, and the band dress was different. We were in really elegant jackets, mm-hmm. you know, shiny jackets with thin ties, and we had a real kind of cool formal look to the band.
Show business,
and yeah very much so. But it took on a whole new nature with jeans and t-shirts and leather jackets, which I'm even more comfortable in when we did the Cutting Room.
Wow, that's when the actor part of you, the performer, comes out, and then
yeah.
You can get into the personality of whatever you're dressing as well.
Well, you really do, and you know, you just think about it. There's a reason that you know certain schools have dress codes, and
yes.
You dress a certain way when you go to church, and a different way than when you go to the bar with your buddies. Mm-hmm. You really do take on a different persona when you, depending on how you dress, and that's why you know you wear suits to Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
So took on an entirely new feel, and it's a feel that I liked so much with the jeans and the t-shirt, because really on a daily basis that's how I dress.
Wow.
It's jeans and t-shirts and boots and a leather jacket, you know, if it's not too hot. That's me.
If you can make it there, you can make it anywhere, you know.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Go ahead, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, that's it. So I'm just saying that it fit the more bluesy style of the music, and really our style is, for the most part, it's blues. Somebody came up to me after the Cutting Room and said, I've never heard elegant blues before.
Mm.
And I thought, wow, what a great catchphrase, elegant blues. But that's what it is. And it's not, I mean, we all know the blues and it's wonderful. I mean, God bless him, B.B. King.
Oh, yes.
Such a tragedy, such a loss. But there's the blues that, you know, I'm working hard on my baby left me blues.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the blues like Doc Pomus and Paul Simon write, where they're deep, deep, deep lyrics, meaningful lyrics. And that's what we're doing.
That's wonderful. Yeah, I'm listening. Oh, fantastic. Thank you for sharing all that about the stage. Patti LuPone stuck out. I can totally see her sitting at one of your shows watching, and then she comes up on stage like that other guy from Rent came up and talked. And the two of you sing Don't Cry For Me, Argentina. I can totally see
right. No, I would love that. Yeah, Anthony Rapp came up at one of our shows and did that song for the crowd. Yeah.
Yeah, how was that? Yeah,
it was wonderful.
Did the crowd get on their feet going, oh, yay, we know him too? And
yeah, absolutely they did, yeah.
New York is some experience.
It really is.
I really want to come out there and see you sometime. So
hope you can, my friend.
You've never been out to L.A., though, have you?
Oh, I've been to L.A., yeah.
Oh, have you?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. I saw that you had, the Examiner had you down for L.A. Music Critic Awards. You won a couple of them, and I go, has he ever even been out here? What are they doing? If you ever come out here, you come out and see me first. I was here first.
Oh, you betcha. You're number one on the list.
You're my number one guy.
Oh, thanks, buddy.
All right. Let me make sure I work this in. Let's crowbar something that I really, really want to talk about is you were given, I keep wanting to say you were given the key to the city. In Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania.
Oh, just Frank Shiner Day.
Just Frank Shiner Day. Yeah, they didn't give you like a chocolate key with gold wrap.
No, beautiful proclamation, though. So beautifully written.
Oh, wow. Now, you tell me a little bit about you. You said you lived in Mountaintop. Tell me about, that small town. And
I was born in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, and when I was about 4 years old, my father bought a house in Mountaintop, and I grew up in a family bakery, so the bakery remained in Wilkes-Barre, so we traveled back and forth, 12 miles. But Mountaintop was literally on top of a mountain. Mm-hmm. We were out really in the middle of nowhere. Down the road, maybe 200, 300 yards downhill, there was a chicken farm.
Uh-huh.
So you could hear the roosters from there. And there was a little gas station with a pinball machine in it. So there really weren't any neighbors until I was a little bit older, and then we were still friends, by the way. The family moved in next to us. I've been in touch. In fact, the girl that is my age came to my show that I just had in Wilkes-Barre, and I saw her there. And it was an interesting place to grow up. It was extremely lonely.
Mm-hmm.
You had to be creative, or because there was nothing else to do.
That's right. That's how these small towns are.
Uh-huh. Very much so.
Yeah.
And that was back in the day when, you're 10 years old with a motorcycle and a little mini bike and a dog and a rifle strapped to your back.
Wow.
And you can go anywhere and do anything. I wouldn't even consider letting my sons or daughters touch a firearm. But, we just roamed free with them.
It was just a different
time.
Very
different that time.
Yeah, very different time. The previous generation says that about us. And the world's gotten so much smaller what's it like going back there after all those? I was going to say after all these years, but you probably haven't been removed from there from that long.
Well, I went back, I went back to Wilkes-Barre. My family, I still have a lot of family there, cousins, and my mom is still there. My dad unfortunately passed away 4 years ago, but I have a sister in town,
mm-hmm.
my aunts and uncles and so on. So they asked me to headline at the Fine Arts Fiesta last Friday night.
Oh,
so
great.
I went there and the mayor declared Frank Shiner Day and gave me a beautiful proclamation in the middle of the show, and I had to make a speech. And I saw all my old friends, and we all went out afterward. And it was right in the middle of Public Square in Wilkes-Barre. And, I mean, this is the 60th anniversary of this Fine Arts Fiesta.
Wow.
So it was such an honor. And you drive past a hotel, and it says Happy Frank Shiner Day up on the billboard.
Yeah.
And, it was all over television and all over the newspapers, and they had me on doing live TV shows, and they just rolled out the red carpet. And, it's small-town America, and it just fills your heart with that kind of support. It's hard to believe, but it was there, and they just really treated me well.
I think they had a proclamation in the afternoon, I think, and then later on the fine happened afterwards, and that's when you start singing. And
well, I got up on the stage, and I opened my show, and they said stop after the first song, and the mayor came out and did a proclamation to me. So I had to kind of make a speech there at the beginning of my show. Knock my timing off a little bit, but we got back on track.
What are you doing? And, what are you doing honoring me in the middle of my set? Good grief.
So it was, I was blown away. Dean, I can't even tell you the feeling that Heck, not only did I think I'd ever have a day named after me or ever think I would ever deserve something like that, but I'm quite sure there's an awful lot of nuns and teachers that are really blown away that that could ever have happened.
Oh, no. Yeah, but local boy makes good, though, huh? Was it received? You see a lot of old friends and
Yeah, we went out afterward and just all hung out. And it's like, you know, it's almost like no time passed.
You didn't get any of that, though. Oh, you're a big shot, huh, Frank?
Yeah. You know,
I'm kidding. I know that probably didn't happen.
You know, you, believe me, I've had that before, and it's I haven't changed. In fact, if I've changed, I've gotten more wise and more understanding of people. Mm-hmm. You know, because I've been through hard times in my life, and you know, in that sense, I've changed. But I'm still, you know, little Francis Shiner from Mountaintop, Pennsylvania, that's looking to, you know, what we're going to do next. I haven't really changed, and then none of this stuff will ever go to my head. I mean, this is for the love of music. I'm having fun. I've taken care of my family. I'm there all the time with them. They travel with me when I go do things. They were all at the show. My wife comes to every gig. I'm a family man first. The rest of it is just fun.
Good. Yeah, and like you said, you had your wife there. She'll keep you on track if you're going somewhere else.
Yeah, she doesn't even have to.
She doesn't even have to, yeah.
She's so beautiful.
And I think you and I discussed that too. You know, it's just a part of being mature may not be, maybe it is the right word, but you know, you grow up at some point and you know that some things aren't worth pursuing or sweating over, you know. Just be thankful where you're going and what you have, right?
Yeah, I've seen people at sales conferences and music industry things and, you know, messing around on their spouses and all. And,
yeah.
You know, the bottom line is, first of all, I wouldn't be organized enough to pull it off. but secondly, I wouldn't want the stress. I wouldn't want the lies. I wouldn't want the cover-up. And I wouldn't want to hurt somebody I love. So I don't get that, but it happens. But it won't happen to me. that's just my attitude.
This album, you go to frankshiner.com. The CD he has out right now is The Real Me, and you can milk this for what it's worth, because you know what, there's plenty of songs on there that they could release as another single. Do they have plans to do another one?
Well, we just did two from the same album. I'm not really sure. Oh, and by the way, it's also available on Amazon, iTunes, and Barnes & Noble stores and so on.
Okay.
But, you know, I don't know. I mean, there's been some talk of maybe releasing Temptation as a single, so that may very well happen.
You've done that you put out a video, I think, of that.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful thing about either YouTube or Facebook is, hey, listen to what I got lately. You know, what do you think?
And yeah, Temptation's gotten some great response. And
that's the Tom Waits song.
We have a little bit faster version out that may very well, a little more up-tempo, you know, a little more radio friendly.
Beautiful. Yeah, let me talk about the three songs. You know, that you're doing a bunch of covers of stuff that's almost like they're almost like deep tracks from other albums from other artists. So It's kind of cool. To Turn You On, who wrote that?
You know, it's a Brian Ferry song, the Roxy Music.
Yeah, Brian Ferry,
and it just had such a cool rhythm to it and a cool New York sound to it. And we changed it up a little bit and added a new intro.
Uh-huh.
And it's you know, really one of the highlights of the show. People just love the song live.
Oh, okay, good. So you're doing that live and people like it? Yeah, it has a nice lively beat, like you said. It's sort of a post-disco.
Exactly.
Yeah, very nice.
Is it raining in New York on Fifth Avenue and off Broadway after dark? Love the lights, don't you? I could walk you through the park if you're feeling blue or whatever. Spring, summer, whenever, winter through fall, I'd do anything to turn you. Anything to turn you on.
There's another one, Long, Long Day. By the
Paul Simon from the movie One Trick Pony.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
And that one, you know, when I was away doing a show for $145 a week by myself, and my wife and baby were home. You know, there was a certain emotion attached to being away from your family like that.
Yeah.
When I heard that song, it actually brought me right back to that moment,
wow.
to those moments away.
Yeah, Paul Simon.
And that's, I just connected with that song. I had to do it.
Paul Simon had two big hits off that movie. I forgot about that one, though. You almost have to get the soundtrack to remember what that version was.
Exactly, because it was just a little song that he did as if he was with his live band in the middle of a movie. It was kind of a show within a show or a song within a show.
Yeah.
And it just got swallowed up.
And as you hear the keyboard, you can almost tell that you're doing a Paul Simon song, but with your own take on it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Who's that lady who drops in for about a minute and starts singing with you?
That was Aisha Eustache on the album.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's in Brooklyn, and she came into the studio. Gary brought her in. But we have, live in the show, we have Anthea White. She's from Australia, and she sings that part in the show. And she's also just magnificent.
Oh, great.
With a great stage presence.
Just wanted to find out, you know, you don't get liner notes with this unless you have something on your site where you can find that stuff. But come check that out.
Yeah.
My love. When I saw him standing there, I said, hey, there's a guy who needs a laugh. That's what I said to myself. What the hell, we're both alone, and I'm just standing here in the corner,
shooting to kill.
The Heart of Saturday Night was another one I really enjoyed. That one's, I'll tell people that it's, we were talking about the blues. It has sort of a blues shuffle, and it's the track most resembling a Steely Dan track, I think, because it's got
that's
that
interesting.
It's, yeah. It's got a kind of a late 70s LA to New York City vibe to it.
Oh, absolutely. And the live, we've actually used it as the show opener, and I come down from the center of the aisle,
mm-hmm.
and most of our performances are on a Saturday night, so it kind of fits. And then we have this off-the-hook sax solo in it that, I mean, you close your eyes, you think you're on the set of Saturday Night Live. This
yeah.
guy is so good.
That's why I said New York City. It almost it evokes that New York sound.
It absolutely does. And it's just such a fun song.
Is it the crack of the pool bar, neon buzzing? Telephone's ringing, it's your second cousin. Barmaid smiling from the corner of her eye. Is it the magic of the melancholy tea? Down in the core, and you're dreaming of them Saturdays that came before, and you're stumbling into the heart of Saturday night.
I mean, that song is just there for fun. You know, there wasn't any deep meaning to it or anything, but it's rhythmic, it's fun, and the crowd just goes crazy during it, really. And I'm bouncing all over the stage like a kid. So I have a lot of fun with that one.
Okay. Frank, as usual, the time is running out, and I just enjoy talking with you. I could do it for another couple half hours, so I don't know about you, but you're a great guy to talk to, and I believe that the people that you run across probably say the same thing. They feel like you're their friend and vice versa. What do you think?
Well, Dean, it's no secret, and everybody that knows me knows that I love people. I love to talk to people, and I love live audiences, and when I talk to you, it's just like two buddies having a conversation. There's no pretense. That's why I enjoy talking to you so much and so often. Even off the air now, we've become friends.
Yes.
And, you know, you just have that way about you. So and you ask the right questions. And
no, I appreciate
that. You make
that.
Me tell stories I don't tell anybody else.
I have note cards, but I hardly use them, you know. I write this stuff down. That's why I'm saying, hey, we didn't get to this, we didn't get to that. But,
yeah.
You know, that saves...
Because it's a conversation, man. That's what you do when you talk to a friend.
That's what my show's about. I really want to make it as natural as possible.
It works.
Let you know
it
that
really
we're
does.
Having a real conversation and that I'm not trying to be stilted and all that stuff. But thanks, Frank Shiner, for coming on my show.
Such
and
a pleasure.
Your contributions are always appreciated, really, a lot.
Thank you, Dean.
Okay. We'll talk to you later, okay? Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And by later, it could mean sooner. And the reason I say that is because... we will have one more installment of this conversation with Frank Shiner, sort of bonus footage where we get to the heart of the matter and the heart of this man. Because when you do that, that's where you find the most inspiration and encouragement. And that's what, after all, this show is all about. So thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you one more time. This is Dean Olson for Strong Rider on the radio saying, put your best pen forward, and let's all be strong riders together. Got it? Got it. Have a great weekend, everybody. Take care. Bye.
You've been listening to Strong Rider on the radio with your host, Dean Olson, on the amazing Women and Men of Power, the world's leading positive programming network powered by Raven International.